Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Defense just had its best week in years, and it happened at the same time airlines are getting crushed by a fuel shock that's cutting industry profits in half. That's the paradox this week, and it tells you everything about where aerospace capital is flowing right now.
We've got Farnborough orders, Q2 earnings from the carriers, and a defense rally that was frankly stunning. Let's get into it.
This week's narrative was the fracturing of the aerospace sector into two distinct regimes, defense and industrial restructuring absorbing capital, while airlines absorb a fuel cost shock that's erasing record revenue gains.
And it's not subtle. The spread between the best and worst performers this week was enormous. We're talking double-digit gains on one side and mid-single-digit losses on the other.
Operationally, what this means is that carriers posting record top-line numbers are watching margin evaporate in real time because jet fuel jumped roughly 18% in a single week, with the Iran conflict as the direct catalyst.
For investors, the repricing is already happening. Defense primes and aerostructure suppliers are being rewarded, and airlines outside the strongest balance sheets are being sold.
The most important signal this week came from defense earnings across the prime contractor sector. The scale of the market reactions to those results tells you the sector is being fundamentally revalued, not just bouncing.
We had multiple defense primes reporting this week, and the moves were not small. We're talking 7, 9, 10, even 14% in a single session.
Operationally, that kind of re-rating reflects genuine contract backlog expansion and the procurement reality of two active conflicts driving sustained demand for interceptors, precision munitions, and autonomous systems.
For investors, the question is whether this is a durable re-rate or an earnings pop. And I think this week's data pushes you toward durable, because it's not just one name, it's a sector-wide repricing on earnings beats.
Right, and that sector-level move is what we want to dig into. But first, let's get through the week's price action, because there's a lot here.
TSA screened 13.7 million passengers this week. That's up about 1% year over year, and 1.3% above the three-year average. So demand is fine. Travel is happening. That's actually the least interesting part of the airline story right now.
Exactly. The demand signal is stable. The cost signal is the problem. Let's go through the tape.
Defense primes were the unambiguous winners. Lockheed Martin up over 14%, Raytheon up over 9%, L3Harris up 7%.
And that's not momentum trading. Those are earnings-driven moves. The filings confirmed operational performance that the market apparently hadn't fully priced.
On the aerostructure and components side, Howmet up over 6%, Hexcel up over 4%. Even Honeywell, which is now a different animal post-spinoff, gained 7.5% on earnings.
The common pressure behind this coordinated move in industrials and defense was the earnings cycle confirming that backlog is converting to revenue faster than the market expected, with the Farnborough order flow providing a forward tailwind.
Meanwhile, on the airline side, it was ugly. Southwest down nearly 7%. American down over 4, JetBlue down 3. The eVTOL names got hit hard too.
What matters is not the individual percentage moves. It's the split. You have industrials and defense outperforming by 10 to 15 percentage points relative to airlines in a single week. That is a significant sector rotation signal.
Boeing was essentially flat, up 2 cents on the week.
Which is interesting, given Farnborough. Nearly 150 orders on opening day, the Philippine Airlines Dreamliner deal, the Riyadh Air Options conversion, and the stock barely moved.
The market's waiting for July 28th. That Q2 earnings call is when investors get the cash flow picture, and that's the number everyone actually cares about.
The more important signal behind Boeing's flatness is that Farnborough orders are welcome, but the production ramp execution and cash conversion are what move that stock now. Orders are backlog. Cash is valuation.
On cargo, FedEx up almost 3%, UPS up about 1.5%. But there's a structural story behind those numbers that goes beyond a weekly move.
FedEx is actually a fascinating case this week because of what they filed. But let's save the details for the Signal segment. The headline is that the cargo operators held up. The major carriers were flat to slightly positive except for Southwest and American, and the low-cost carriers got hit hardest.
Allegiant down 4%, Frontier down over 6%. Those are names with thinner balance sheets and less pricing power to absorb a fuel shock.
And the eVTOL names, Archer down over 10%, Joby down over 7%, those are in a different category. That's not a fuel story. That's a sentiment and rate story for pre-revenue names.
So, the scorecard for the week, defense and industrial suppliers up 5 to 14%, major carriers flat to down, low-cost carriers down 4 to 7, and eVTOLs hit hard. The sector has genuinely bifurcated.
And that bifurcation is the setup for everything we're going to discuss today. The second thing we want to flag this week is the airline earnings picture, because the stock moves tell part of the story, but the filings tell a more complicated one. Alaska, Southwest, and American all reported this week, and the surface red is airlines had a bad week. The deeper red is more segmented than that.
Right, and I think the Southwest number is the one that deserves the most attention, because a nearly 7% drop on earnings is not a minor disappointment. That's a market telling you something about the business model, not just the quarter.
Southwest filed their 8K on July 22nd, stock at $47.66, down 2.12% on the day. Then, by end of week, they're sitting at $45.08. So the market kept selling after the initial reaction. That's not an overreaction and a bounce. That's sustained pressure.
And the context matters enormously here. Southwest has been in the middle of a fairly significant strategic overhaul. They've been adding assigned seating. They've been renegotiating relationships with corporate travel managers. They've been trying to close the unit revenue gap with the network carriers. A bad earnings quarter in the middle of a transformation is a credibility hit, not just a financial miss.
I want to push back on that slightly because we don't have the specific revenue and cost figures from the 8K itself. The detailed metrics are in the earnings release attached as an exhibit. But what the 8K structure tells us and what the stock reaction confirms is that the results came in below investor expectations on at least one key dimension.
Fair point on the data limitation. But here's what I think we can say with confidence. The fuel shock is not hitting carriers equally. Southwest runs an almost entirely domestic network, predominantly short haul. Their hedging programs have historically been aggressive, but they've wound those down over the last few years. A fuel spike of 18% in a week lands differently on a carrier with limited international pricing leverage and lower average fares.
That's the structural vulnerability. Network carriers, United, Delta, can reprice international cabins, particularly premium cabins, relatively quickly. They have more levers. Southwest's fare structure doesn't have the same elasticity at the top end.
And that shows up in the stock performance comparison. United up 0.64% on the week, Delta up 0.62%, Alaska basically flat, Southwest down 6.74%, American down 4.39%. The market is making very precise distinctions between balance sheet strength and network architecture.
American is a separate story because they have the debt load issue on top of the fuel issue. Their 10Q covers January through June, and whatever that document shows about liquidity and cost structure is going to be read through the lens of a carrier that entered this fuel shock from a weaker financial position than its peers.
The stock at $14.47 at week's end, that's a carrier the market is treating very differently from Delta at $85 or United at $118. The valuation gap reflects the perceived risk gap.
And Alaska is interesting because they filed their 8K on July 21st, stock down 1.26% on the day, but finished the week essentially flat at $46.13. So the initial reaction was negative and then stabilized. That's a different pattern from Southwest's sustained sell-off.
Alaska has the Hawaiian Airlines integration as a live variable. Any quarter right now is being evaluated partly on how that integration is proceeding. Cost synergies, network overlap, revenue capture. If the results showed integration progress, that might explain why the market stabilized after the initial drop.
The broader point for listeners is this. When you see the airline sector selling off on a fuel shock, the instinct is to treat it as a sector-wide story. But this week's data is telling you it's not uniform. The carriers with international exposure, premium pricing power, and cleaner balance sheets are being distinguished from the domestically concentrated, cost-sensitive carriers. That distinction is going to matter a lot over the next 2 to 3 quarters if fuel stays elevated.
And if the Iran conflict sustains oil price pressure, which is not a short-term resolution scenario, you could see that gap widen further. This isn't a one-week earnings noise story.
Exactly. Now, the other thing I want to bring in here, because it connects to the restructuring theme we've been tracking, is what's happening at the corporate architecture level across the sector. And FedEx is the clearest example this week.
Yeah, because FedEx filed 2 meaningful 8Ks this week, and they don't get nearly enough attention relative to the airline earnings noise.
The first one, filed July 21st, disclosed that FedEx completed the spinoff of FedEx Freight on June 1st. Less than truckload freight, including FedEx Custom Critical and LTL Select, is now a separate publicly traded company, and simultaneously, FedEx shifted its fiscal year from May 31 to December 31, which means they're in a 7-month transition reporting period right now.
That's a significant operational and structural change to process simultaneously. You're spinning off a major business unit and changing your fiscal calendar in the same reporting cycle. From an investor standpoint, that makes comparables genuinely difficult for the next 2 to 3 quarters.
The strategic logic of the freight spinoff is about focus. FedEx Express and Ground have very different asset profiles and customer relationships than LTL Freight. Separating them lets each business be valued and managed on its own terms. The market has generally viewed this favorably. FedEx stock up 2.85% on the week.
But here's what I find more telling about FedEx this week. The second 8K, filed July 24th, about the new executive severance plan.
Walk through that, because I think listeners might underweight it.
So FedEx filed to disclose that the board approved a unified executive severance plan, effective July 20th, replacing all individual management retention agreements that executives previously held. The new plan standardizes severance terms, attaches non-compete and non-solicitation covenants, and crucially, includes clawback provisions if executives violate those covenants after separation.
And you read that as significant, why? Because on the surface, it looks like routine governance.
Because you don't standardize executive retention agreements right after completing a major spinoff and restructuring unless you're either concerned about talent retention risk or you're preparing for additional organizational changes that might trigger departures, or both.
That's the interpretation I'd lean toward too. When a company has just fundamentally changed its organizational structure and then immediately locks down executive severance terms with clawback provisions, they're managing the human capital side of a transformation. They don't want executives making their next move before the integration work is done.
And the non-compete covenants matter here specifically because FedEx Freight is now a standalone public competitor in the freight space. You can't have former FedEx executives immediately going to work for the entity you just spun off and taking institutional knowledge with them.
So the FedEx story this week is actually two-layered. The structural transformation at the entity level with the freight spinoff and the talent and governance architecture being locked down to support that transformation. Both filings are part of the same strategic narrative.
And combined with Honeywell's spinoff completing in late June, which triggered the RSU vesting for executives like Bilal, as we saw in that Form 4, you're seeing a pattern across the sector of major industrial companies actively restructuring their corporate architecture, not just optimizing within existing structures.
Honeywell Aerospace is now its own publicly traded entity. FedEx Freight is now its own publicly traded entity. These are real changes to how capital is organized in this sector, and they're happening in the same earnings cycle where the macro environment is bifurcating defense from commercial aviation.
The question for the next quarter is whether that restructuring is creating shareholder value or just creating complexity. Honeywell's 5.7% single-day gain on earnings suggests the market thinks the separation is value accretive. FedEx's 2.85% weekly gain is more modest, but directionally supportive.
And that's the thread that connects these supporting signals. Airline earnings pain is real, but it's differentiated. Corporate restructuring is accelerating, and the early market verdicts are cautiously positive. Both of those dynamics are going to shape how this sector looks heading into the back half of 2026. Here's what I keep coming back to when I look at this week's tape. The defense primes and the airlines aren't just having different weeks. They're responding to completely different economic logics right now, and I think that distinction has durability beyond a single earnings cycle.
Which gets to the core question. Is this cyclical positioning or structural differentiation?
And I come down hard on structural. Here's why. When you look at Lockheed up 14%, Raytheon up 9%, L3Harris up 7%, those aren't moves driven by a quarterly beat and a multiple expansion. Those are moves driven by a market repricing the duration of the demand signal, two active conflict theaters, sustained procurement pressure, autonomous systems investment. Those don't resolve in a quarter.
I want to push on that slightly. Some of what you're describing is absolutely structural. The backlog dynamics, the multi-year contract cycles. But a 14% single session move on LMT has a cyclical component. Earnings surprises generate outsized reactions when sentiment has been depressed. You can't fully disentangle the two.
Fair, but look at what's happening on the commercial side. Southwest down nearly 7% is not a one-quarter story. That's the market making a structural judgment about that carrier's ability to absorb persistent cost pressure, given its network architecture and the transformation it's in the middle of. American at 1447, that valuation reflects a structural balance sheet concern, not just a bad quarter on fuel.
And the eVTOLs, Archer down 10%, Joby down over 7%, that's a completely separate structural story. Pre-revenue names in a rising rate environment with execution risk. Nothing cyclical about that sell-off.
So what you have is three distinct structural trajectories operating simultaneously within one sector label. Defense primes on an upward re-rating path, legacy carriers bifurcating by balance sheet and network quality. Pre-revenue disruptors under sustained capital pressure.
And then you have the restructuring layer on top, Honeywell Aerospace as a standalone entity, FedEx Freight spun out, which is its own structural signal about how management teams are thinking about value creation. You don't undertake those separations unless you believe the sum of parts exceeds the whole.
The Hexel Form 4 is interesting here too. Nick Stanage exercising options at $74.74 and selling at $110.70. That's a 60-year-old executive monetizing gains at a meaningful premium. It's not panic selling, it's planned liquidity. But the fact that insider exercise and disposition is happening at these levels tells you something about where management sees the valuation ceiling in the near term.
Or it's estate planning at a stock price that reflects genuine business improvement. Hexel's up over 4% on the week. The composites business has strong aerospace demand behind it. Insider selling into strength isn't necessarily bearish. It's often just rational financial planning.
Agreed on that read. The broader point is that the divergence between defense and commercial isn't a temporary allocation effect. It reflects genuinely different fundamental trajectories, and the filings this week, the earnings, the restructuring disclosures, the insider activity, all point in the same direction.
So the base case is a sustained sector bifurcation where defense and industrial suppliers continue to attract capital at the expense of cost-vulnerable commercial carriers. But the key risk is a rapid de-escalation in the Middle East that removes the geopolitical premium from defense multiples and simultaneously provides fuel cost relief to the airlines, which would compress the spread materially in both directions at once.
That's the scenario to watch, and it gets us right into what we're monitoring in the week ahead. Four specific things worth tracking.
First one, watch Boeing's Q2 earnings call on July 28th, because it will confirm or contradict the narrative that Farnborough order flow is translating into production execution and cash generation recovery.
Watch crude oil and jet fuel price movement through the end of the month, because it will confirm or contradict the narrative that the Iran conflict premium is durable and airlines with domestic heavy networks face a structural cost disadvantage heading into Q3.
Watch any additional Form 4 or institutional ownership disclosures from the defense prime names, particularly Lockheed and Raytheon, because it will confirm or contradict the narrative that this week's re-rating was the beginning of a durable accumulation phase rather than a sell-the-news event after strong prints.
And watch Southwest's follow-on investor communications and any Q3 guidance updates, because it will confirm or contradict the narrative that the strategic transformation underway is credible to institutional holders, or whether the sustained sell-off this week reflects a deeper loss of confidence in the execution story.
Four clean watch items: Boeing on cash, fuel on durability, insider flows on defense conviction, and Southwest on transformation credibility.
Let me pull the threads together. What this week told us is that aerospace isn't one sector right now. It's three separate stories sharing an industry classification.
Defense and industrial suppliers repriced on earnings that confirm the demand signal is durable. Airlines bifurcated sharply by balance sheet and network quality under a fuel shock. And corporate restructuring across the majors is actively reshaping how capital is organized at the entity level.
The through line connecting all three is that the macro environment, conflict-driven procurement, fuel price volatility, rate sensitivity for pre-revenue names, is accelerating differentiation that was already underway before this week.
And the investor posture that follows from this week's data is one of precision over breadth. Owning aerospace as a category is less useful than it's been in years. The distinctions within the sector are doing the real work.
13.7 million passengers through TSA checkpoints confirms demand is intact. The question for the next quarter is who can actually profit from that demand, given where input costs are moving. And this week gave you a pretty clear first draft of the answer.
We'll be back next week with Boeing's cash flow number, which may be the single most important data point this sector produces in the month of July. Until then. Aviation Intelligence Weekly is produced for informational purposes only. Nothing in this episode constitutes investment advice, a solicitation, or a recommendation to buy or sell any security. All data referenced reflects publicly available information, including SEC filings, TSA checkpoint data, and market price records for the period July 19th through July 26, 2026. Stock prices and percentage moves cited are point-in-time observations and do not represent guaranteed future performance. Listeners should conduct their own due diligence and consult a qualified financial professional before making any investment decisions. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Want the inside track on aviation's biggest players? Aviation Intelligence Weekly brings you expert analysis of airline earnings, breaking industry news, and deep dive company histories. From American Airlines to Boeing, we cover the business of flight every week. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.